I don't know about you folks, but I like stories. And I'm glad Jesus loved stories because he told a lot of them. It's called The Man That Died For Me. For many years, I wanted to go as a foreign missionary, but my way seemed hedged about. At last, I went to live in California. Life was rough in the mining country where I lived with my husband and little boys. While there, I heard about a man who had lived over the hills and was dying of tuberculosis. The men said, "He is so vile that no one can stay with him. So we place some food near him and leave him for 24 hours. We will find him dead one day, and the sooner the better. Never had a relative, I guess." This pitiful story haunted me as I went about my work. For 3 days, I tried to get someone to go and see him to find out if he was in the need of better care. As I turned from the last man, vexed with his indifference, the thought came to me, why not go yourself? Here is missionary work, if you want it. I will not tell you how I weighed the probable uselessness of my going, nor how I shrank from one so vile as he. It was not the kind of work I wanted. But at last, one day, I went over the hills to his little hut. It was a mud cabin, containing but one room. The door stood open. In one corner, on some straw and colored blankets, I found the dying man. Sin had left awful marks on his face, and if I had not been told that he could not move, I would have retreated. As my shadow fell over the floor, he looked up and greeted me with an oath. I stepped forward a little, and again he swore. "Don't speak so, my friend," I said. "I ain't your friend. I ain't got any friends," he said. "Well, I am your friend, and..." But the oaths came quickly, and he said, "You ain't my friend. I never had any friends, and I don't want anyone." I reached out at arm's length the fruit I had brought for him, and stepping back to the doorway, asked if he remembered his mother, hoping to find a tender place in his heart. But he cursed her. I spoke of God, and he cursed him. I tried to speak of Jesus and his death for us, but he stopped me with his oaths and said, "That's all a lie. Nobody ever died for others." I went away discouraged, saying to myself that I knew it was useless. But the next day I went again, and every day for 2 weeks. He did not show the gratitude of a dog. And at the end of that time, I said that I was not going any more. That night, as I was putting my little boy to bed, I did not pray for the miner. My little boy noticed it and said, "Mama, you didn't pray for the bad man." "No," I answered with a sigh. "Have you given him up, Mama?" "Yes, I guess so." "Has God given him up, Mama? Ought you to give him up till God does?" I couldn't sleep that night. I thought of the dying man, so vile and with no one to care for. I rose and went away by myself to pray. But the moment I knelt, I was overpowered by the sense of how little meaning there had been to my prayers. I had no faith, and I had not really cared beyond a kind of half-hearted sentiment. I had not claimed his soul for God. Oh, the shame of such a missionary zeal! I fell on my face literally as I cried, "Oh, Christ, give me a little glimpse of the worth of a human soul." Do not pray this way unless you're willing to give up ease and selfish pleasure, for the life will take on a different meaning after this revelation. I remained on my knees until Calvary became a reality to me. I cannot describe those hours. They came and went unheeded. But I learned that night what I had never known before, what it was to travail for a human soul. I saw my Lord as I had never seen him before. I knelt there till the answer came. As I went back to my room, my husband said, "How about your minor? He is going to be saved." "How are you going to do it?" he asked. "The Lord is going to save him. I don't know. I do not know that I will do anything about it," I replied. The next morning brought a lesson in Christian work which I had never learned before. On other days, I had waited until afternoon, and then, when my work was over, I would change my dress and take a walk while the shadows were on the hillsides. That day, the moment my little boys went to school, I left my work and hurried over the hills, not to see that vile wretch, but to win a soul. I thought the man might die. As I passed on, a neighbor came out of her cabin and said, "I will go over the hills with you." I didn't want her to go, but it was another lesson for me. God could plan better than I could. She had her little girl with her, and as we reached the cabin, she said, "I will wait out here." I do not know what I expected, but the man greeted me with an awful oath. Still, it did not hurt me, for I was behind Christ, and I stayed there. I could bear what struck him first. While I was changing the basin of water and towel for him, things which I had done every day, but which had never which he had never thanked me for, the clear laugh of the little girl rung out on the air. "What's that?" said the man eagerly. "It's a little girl outside waiting for me." "Would you mind letting her come in?" he said, in a different tone from any I had ever heard before. Stepping to the door, I beckoned to her. Then, taking her hand, said, "Come in and see the sick man, Lucy." She shrank back as she saw his face. But I assured her with, "Poor sick man, he can't get up. He wants to see you." She looked like an angel, her bright face framed in golden curls and her hair and her eyes tender and full of pity. In her hand she held the flowers she had picked from the purple sage, and bending toward him, said, "I'm sorry you're sick. Do you want my flowers?" He laid his great bony hand upon beyond the flowers, onto the plump hand of the child, and tears came to his eyes as he said, "I had a little girl once. Her name was Lucy. She cared for me. Nobody else did. Guess I'd been different if she'd lived. I've hated everybody since she died." I knew at once that I had the key to the man's heart. The thought came quickly, born of that midnight prayer service, and I said, "When I spoke of your mother and your wife, you cursed them. I know now that they were not good women, or you could not have done so." "Good women? Oh, you don't know nothing about that kind of women. You can't think what they was. Well, if your little girl had lived and grown up with them, wouldn't she have been like them? Would you have liked to have her live like that?" He evidently had never thought of that, and his great eyes looked far off for a full minute. As they came back to mind, he cried, "Oh, God, no, I'd kill her first. I'm glad she died." Reaching out and taking the poor hand, I said, "The dear Lord didn't want her to be like them. He loved her even more than you did, so he took her away. He is keeping her for you. Don't you want to see her again?" Oh, I'd be willing to be burned alive 1,000 times over if I could just see my little girl once more, my little Lucy. Oh, friends, you know what a blessed story I had to tell that hour. I had been so close to Calvary that night that I could tell it in earnest. The poor face grew ashen pale as I talked, and the man threw up his arms as if his agony was mastering him. 2 or 3 times he gasped as if losing his breath. Then clutching me, he said, "What's that you said that other day about talking to someone out of sight?" "It is praying. I tell him what I want." "Pray now, quick. Tell him I want my little girl again. Tell him anything you want to." I took the hands of the child and I placed them on the trembling hands of the man. Then, dropping on my knees with the child in front of me, I bade her pray for the man who had lost his little Lucy, and I wanted to see her again. As nearly as I remember, this was Lucy's prayer. Dear Jesus, this man is very sick. He's lost his little girl, and he feels bad about it. I'm so sorry for him, and he's sorry too. Won't you help him and show him how to find his little girl, please? Amen. Heaven seemed to open before us, and there stood one with the prints of the nails in his hands and the wounds in his side. Lucy slipped away, but the man kept saying, "Tell him more about it. Tell him everything, but oh, you don't know." Then he poured out such a torrent of confession that I could not have borne if but for one who was close to us at that hour. By and by, the poor man grasped the strong hand. It was 3 days later that the poor, tired soul turned from everything to him, the mighty to save, the man that died for me. He lived on for weeks, as if God would show how real was the change. I was telling him one day about a meeting, when he said, "I'd like to go to a meeting once." So we planned a meeting, and the men from the mill and the mines came and filled the room. "Now, boys," said he, "get down on your knees while she tells about that man that died for me." I had been brought up to believe that a woman should not speak in meeting, but I found myself talking, and I tried to tell the simple story of the cross. After a while, he said, "Boys, you don't half believe it, or you'd cry. You couldn't help it. Raise me up. I'd like to tell it once." So they raised him up, and between his short breathing and coughing, he told the story. He had to use the language he knew. "Boys," he said, "you know how the water runs down the sluice boxes and carries off the dirt and leaves the gold behind? Well, the blood of that man she tells me about went right over me just like that. It carried off about anything, everything, but it left enough for me to see Lucy and to see the man that died for me. Oh, boys, can't you love him too?" A few days later, there came a look into his face which told that the end had come. I had to leave him, so I said, "What shall I say tonight, Jack?" "Just good night," he said. "What will you say to me when we meet again?" "I'll say good morning over there." The next morning, the door was closed, and I found two men inside sitting silently by a board stretched across two stools. They turned back the sheet from the dead, and I looked on the face which seemed to have come back nearer to the image of God. "I wish you could have seen him when he went," they said. "Tell me about it." "Well, all at once he brightened up, about midnight, and smiling said, 'I'm going, boys. Tell her I'm going to see the man that died for me.' And he was gone. Kneeling there with my hands over those poor, cold ones which had been stained with human blood, I asked that I might understand more and more the worth of a human soul and be drawn into a deeper sympathy with Christ's yearning compassion, not willing that any should perish.